My name is Manuel Andrade. I'm 58 years old. Today's date is September 11th, 2008. We're here in Springfield, Massachusetts, and I'm here with Susan, my wife.
And my name is Susan Andrade, or Andrade, or Andrade, and my age is 58. Today is September 11th, 2008, in Springfield, Mass., and I am here with my husband.
Okay, so we've just celebrated our 32nd wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this was a celebration of that. But I'd like to know, when did you know that I was the one for you?
Well, it was a little bit of a slow process. But I can remember the week that I was in Washington, D.C., visiting Ann and Peter and you, mm-hmm. when I just met you. That was a fun week. And then that same week, your grandfather died, and you rode with me back in the car to Massachusetts. And I remember just thinking that you are a really nice, warm person, and I really liked that about it. We talked the whole way. You didn't drive at all because you couldn't drive a standard, so I drove the whole way.
But you later taught me.
I did. And I remember when I dropped you off at the, I think it was the Providence Airport.
Yeah.
You gave me a kiss goodbye, just kind of a nice, you know, friendly. And I remember thinking, I think I want to do that again. So that was kind of the beginning of my interest. And then later that summer, when we met again for when you were studying for the bar exam, then it was like the first time I saw you, I already knew. And that was what, 4 or 5 months later.
Yeah.
But it was like, and that was. It just kind of took my breath away. I was not expecting that reaction that quickly because it had nothing. We hadn't said any more, talked for 4 months. So that was mine. When was yours?
Well, interestingly enough, I have a very similar story. I think for me, the moment was that second meeting or that follow-up meeting over the summer at Ann and Peter's. Actually, it was at Peter's house. We got together that one afternoon, and I was with Peter, and you, I think, had come with Ann, or maybe by yourself, but we met in their living room, Peter's folks' living room, and you got up when I came in, because I came in later than you, and we kissed at that point. A nice casual hello kiss.
Uh-huh.
But at that point, speaking of that electric spark, that's when it happened for me. And then, you know, as you know, we didn't spend a whole lot of time not apart after that.
Yeah.
But for me, it was that exact moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so then it was after that that you actually went on a, quote, a date.
Right.
When we went to the movies.
Right, right. And then danced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just remember being laughing at the fact that I had a date because it was like not anybody, nobody had dates.
Nobody
back then.
Had dates, right. And I don't know, do they do that anymore?
Have
I
dates?
Think, I don't think they
I
do
I don't think any. They call anything dates.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so that led to the marriage, 32 years. So in that 32 years, any favorite stories that you have?
About us or about you?
Just us, the family, whatever.
I'm going to have to think about that a minute. Do you have any?
Well, I've got a couple.
Okay.
I think one of my favorite, and it's not so much a one specific incident, but what I will always remember about us is these parties that we've ended up throwing over the years. And two in particular come to mind to me. The first was that series of parties we had in the summer with all of our friends, all of our neighbors, and then all of our kids and their neighbors.
And their friends. Yeah.
And how we would organize the entire thing with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pounds of food and, you know, all the drink. But the part that I will always remember is, you know, we always had music, and you were pretty much in charge of most of the music, but we always liked to dance in the house, and we'd clear away places to dance. But that one time when the music started and the older folks, that's us, started just, and the house had, what, 100 people in it. We just started dancing in the kitchen, uh-huh. and it took over the entire house, the upstairs, the downstairs, where everybody was, and all the younger folks who were outside barbecuing and stuff all came in and joined us in that big dance. To me, that's one of the things that I will remember about what we did in our marriage, if you will.
Yeah.
The other one was the party where you kind of organized our costume party. We did the Academy Award kind of costume party. And I think the thing that always impressed me about how you could do all of that was the fact that you planned everything so well, so that people always talked about how great a hostess you were, and then therefore how great a host I was. So so it was just great for me to kind of follow in the path of the things that you did so well.
Well, you did, though. You just picked up and became the big MC. You were always the host for all the show, the game stuff, and willing to go anywhere with it, depending on what the question was.
Well, it worked.
Yeah. I would agree with you on the parties. In fact, that warms me just because it was, I remember one of Emily's friends coming out and saying she'd never been in a party where the parents and the kids were all playing games together and dancing and doing all that stuff. That was cool.
Speaking of Emily, we just learned that she's getting married. And so what kind of advice do you have for her and the other kids that we have, James and Caroline, mm-hmm. in the future?
I think for each one of them, I would hope that they can know themselves well enough to be able to know what they want, express how they feel about things, be really honest with themselves and honest with the people they live with,
mm-hmm.
and share and feel safe enough, if that's the right word. I don't mean it in a danger kind of way, but emotionally safe to just live their lives as fully and as open and joyously as possible without being too worried about the concern that people might have about them. Just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's enough times that worries take over. And that's, to me, it's like you got to live it and enjoy it. And that's what I would. The other thing I would think about is with each of them and their partners is to figure out how to really communicate with each other. And I think for us, that was but it always was an ongoing process,
mm-hmm.
that we had to even learn how to argue, kind of, you know, how to explain what we meant to say and how we meant to say it and come to resolutions at the end of whatever the disagreements would be. And that's kind of the same open, emotional, vulnerable place that I think it's good. It helps you grow as a couple, not just as a person. And you?
Oh, I totally agree with that. And to me, it's, you know, the focus is always to learn how to communicate and to communicate and to communicate. because what I've discovered over the years is that maybe it's just everybody, but everybody has a different way of communicating. And some people are more comfortable being open and communicating feelings than others, as we've learned. And I think that it's really important that each of them find their space and figure out how to do that in a way that still maintains their integrity, but also maintains the relationship building that a marriage is all about. And it's hard. It is. I mean, we continue to figure out ways to do that and have to learn that, you know, after 32 years, we don't have it figured out, but it's a process to keep growing with.
And isn't that living?
Yeah.
You know, that it's still growing and moving.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think that the other thing, I think you may have said it, is I think it's important that they learn to cherish each other's individuality. And I think that once you can do that and celebrate the fact that not only are you a couple, but you're also independent beings, you learn more, you grow more, and I think it ends up deepening the relationship. So mm-hmm. I'd wish that for all of them as well.
That sounds good.
And speaking of growing, you know, it seems like, you know, one of the things that I'd like to ask you about, you know, that I've been so impressed with, again, sort of a marriage question, is, you know, you went back to school kind of in the later part of your 30s, 40s, and ended up getting a doctorate in vocal performance. Tell me about how that worked for you, why you made that decision, and what it's done for you.
Well, I think for me, not recognizing early in my life and that first of all, I knew music was important, but I didn't know how much. And I knew I liked singing, but I didn't like singing in front of people. And I didn't want to do anything. I was too shy to even take voice lessons. So when I finally got to the point of deciding I was worth the money that would cost, because I was always bouncing out things out with money too, that it was worth it for me to study, and then to get such really quick, immediate feedback on how I had a lot of ability was exciting to me. But then after a while, it was like I wanted to do more. And I think it was because I finally hit kind of the right place, the right, I almost want to say well, mm-hmm. of maybe what I was supposed to be doing. If not earlier, definitely then. You know, it was like I hit it. And it was like, at that point, I couldn't stop. It was like, well, you can stop, but why would you? Because I loved every class I took. I liked being surrounded by college students. That was just a kill for me. I thought it was really fun to be with these young people. And I loved the challenge. It scared the bejesus out of me half the time. because I was older, I had a lot of confidence about, and maybe it wasn't confidence for performing, but it was kind of like, you know, I've waited this long. What the heck? Just enjoy it. Because if I stop here, it's okay. I've done what I've done, yeah. You know. And so I just kept going along. And it just was like, well, I'll try the next thing and do that a little. And always got encouragement. So when I was finally done, it was like, oh, my gosh. I really did it. I did everything I could do academically. And that was a real cool feeling for me.
Well, and for me, it was just so great to see you continue to grow, but also the example that you set for, I think, not just our family. You know, our kids were able to see that, you know, it's about finding your passion, mm-hmm. and going for it. And it doesn't matter if you don't have it at 12 or 22 or 32, but as long as you're living and breathing, when you find your passion, you should continue to go for it. And they've talked about that since.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
I think that is something that's a terrific lesson that I think you've helped impart to them. And I don't even know if you've fully embraced that yet, but I digress, because there's another story I want to talk. I want to throw out to you. And I don't know that I've ever told you this either, but you know, when you went through all of this, the process, you had to do all these recitals. And I think that the moment that I realized how great you were was your very first recital. When you walked on stage, and first of all, it was this big room, you know, lots of people, all your friends, and we had the entire neighborhood, and, you know, it was just, there must have been, what, 200 people there.
And all my college friends.
And all your college friends.
Yes.
And you walked out, and there was this spotlight on you, and you had this beautiful dress, and first of all, before you even started, there was this audible gasp amongst the people about, wow, who is this person? And then you started singing, and it was like people were just taken to another plane almost, you know? Everybody just sort of sat back in awe that not only is this friend, mother, acquaintance, colleague this talented, but she's sharing this with everybody. It was a magical, absolutely magical night. And at that point in time, it was sort of like, oh my God, you cannot stop this. I feel like I was encouraging along the way, but once I saw that part of you, that talent demonstrated in front of everybody, it was like, wow, you got to keep going. You just have to. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You know, we mentioned, or I mentioned, or, you know, in the course of this discussion already, our kids, and obviously, you know, they mean a lot to both of us. I would like to get your feelings in terms of maybe a little bit of how you felt when they were first born.
Oh, gosh. I think with Emily, I was just overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know, first child, what do you do? Look at this beautiful baby. The responsibility of it all and the joy of it all, the wonder, all of that. And she was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Although she was jaundiced. We thought she was kind of Asian looking. Later we learned the poor child had to suffer with our early incompetence.
Well, that wasn't us. That was, you know.
She got over it.
Right.
And I think with James, I remember being worried, excited that we had a son. I thought, oh my God, how, I don't know, what do you do with boys? You know, that's how I felt. And yet I was just thrilled. And I couldn't wait to help him become actually the wonderful man that he is now. I just wanted to see that process. And it was fascinating to see how completely different the personalities of James and Emily were. Just, and I hesitate to say it's boy and girl, male, female, but there were definitely things that were very much male, mm-hmm. and her and Emily is female, that was, I refused to see as a possibility, even through my teaching years when I was in early education, because I just thought that can't be, you know. But when James would chew a piece of toast into the shape of a gun, when we didn't allow guns in our house, I thought, there's something to this.
Yeah.
And he'd be shooting people with his toast, you know?
Right.
It's like, what?
And you were so, so cognizant of not forcing stereotypes that you wouldn't show, you wouldn't have dolls and things, but Emily finally needed...
Well, I had dolls, but not Barbies.
Not Barbies. Okay, excuse me, yes. Oh, is there any other kind? No, I'm just kidding. But... Right, but then remember what her favorite color was in that whole period?
It was pink, everything. From socks to underwear to bows in her hair.
So this,
like, how?
This child that you're trying to make this...
become a earth goddess child is not happening at all.
That's great.
And then with Caroline, of course, she was, as the third, it was just a whole different... You're much more comfortable with the whole rearing process, and it was... It was just wonderful just to have her.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like just I focused on her rather than the first child, the boy.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I will never forget a night when I think I was probably nursing and just she was resting on my shoulder. And I just remember hearing the puff of her breath on my neck. I could feel it and hear it. And it was the quietest, sweetest sound. And I, at the time, I thought, I never want to forget that. Mm-hmm. That was just, and, you know, they've all been, I think as for us as parents, I'm kind of going away, but we've talked about this a little bit, our goal was to be sure that they each felt strong in their own way, whatever
right.
it was,
right.
and that they could be whoever they were,
yep.
and they didn't need to be first child, second child, third child, although that kind of does fall into play sometimes, but that they could be sure of themselves as the person they are, and that right. you want. And I feel like they've started going that way. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very different, all of them.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing.
Well, and you know, my mantra has always been, you are very special and very important, because there's nobody in the world just like you. And when times are tough, when things happen that, you know, you just don't have control over, I always come back to that very simple kind of philosophy, if you will. I think that's something that you've done just by kind of the way you are. You know, I sometimes have to put it in, you know, a little more clobber over the head kind of strategy, but here it is.
But you know, saying it's important.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Letting them know those words.
So what kind of dreams do you have for them?
Oh, geez. I guess you could just be kind of, it sounds trite.
Mm-hmm.
I just want them to be happy. I really do. I just want them to find their own happiness.
Sometimes, you know, cliches are there for a reason,
yeah.
you know. They're kind of universal truths.
Right. I mean, I hope they can live well. And I don't mean that by monetarily. I mean in their sense of who they are and how they look at the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's 'cause I think you can... And maybe I've come to this a little later than when I was helping them grow up, but you can choose to look at things from a positive or negative point of view, and it is the choice you make that makes it be what it is. If things aren't going well, they can be options for opportunity and growth and all that stuff, which I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to decide that you want to make it that way, and I hope they can. Rather than get down on it all and then just enjoy life. How about you?
Well, I hope that they become the kind of people that impact people positively, and so that the world becomes a better place because they were in it. I don't mean they have to, you know, win a Nobel Prize or, you know, do something so extraordinary that it's obvious that the world is a better place. But, you know, if they live lives that are filled with grace, filled with contribution to them, to the community, that are filled with their ability to grow and learn, and hopefully be happy doing that, then I think that they will be successful and people that I know that I would be proud knowing. And I think that's my dream for them, each of them, to, you know, individually.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of philosophy, you know, life philosophy, is important to you in terms of how you feel like you would like to be remembered?
Well, I'd like to be remembered on stage.
Hmm?
No, not really. Although, you know, if I'd started earlier, I might have been remembered on stage.
Exactly.
I don't know. You know, just don't know.
Right.
So how I'd like to be remembered. I think as somebody who lived with joy. You know, this summer when we were at the Cape and had played all those games. And I remember being so overflowingly happy and having a blast playing the games. And I don't remember if it was James or Caroline or somebody who just said, geez, I just don't think I've ever seen you this way before. You know, and it was just, I'd like that to be one of the memories that people would have. The other thing that I know I do now is I think I have a pretty good sense of humor, and in my one way I bring it out is in very bleak moments I find really ironic or, you know, worst case scenarios that make it funny, and and I think that's a good balance to the craziness that either I live in or I create myself, because I do a lot of that.
Yeah, and laughing a lot is important.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to. And then I think I hopefully seem like someone with convictions that I'm, you know, I'm a good person. I hope that's how I'm viewed, not just a sarcastic person, you know, but good, with a good soul.
That's great. Well, your sense of humor has always been one of the things that I've, you know, been attracted to forever. Can you think of any stories that required that sense of humor?
Oh, I've gotten into so many jams. Are you thinking of one?
Not in well, this one is really more a reflection on me, but it's because you guys made.
Oh, is this your closet story?
No, no, God, no. Although I could tell that one.
That's a pretty funny story. That's you, though.
No, that's
that one.
No, that we're reversing the role here. I'll come if we have time. I can
think
come
that's
back.
A good one to tell. Mm.
I was actually thinking more about the time we took a family vacation, a driving vacation, and we were going to go to. We were going to go to Disneyland or Disney World, and by way of Memphis.
Yeah.
And this was during Emily's early phase where she was, you know, I don't know how old was she? 11.
12, 13. Okay. She was in love with Elvis for quite a while.
All right. So that was her Elvis phase.
Yeah.
And so we're driving along from, this is when we lived in Kansas City, and we're driving along the kind of, not the major highways of Missouri, but, you know, a two-lane highway, and car is jam-packed as always. The van was jam-packed, and, you know, you're the one who knows how to pack. You had it all hermetically sealed.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're driving along and hear this big boom. And what happens? We have a flat tire. Now, I'm not going to say that this is the kind of thing that you looked at before we left and said, should we look at getting some new tires before we go? Because, you know.
Because I knew that we should, but I thought I couldn't say that. I wasn't being honest.
I think I was in that phase of why do today what you can put off until tomorrow.
Well, I was just following suit. I didn't even bring it up.
Okay, great. Anyway, so we get this flat. We come, you know, we're actually a blowout, so there's not much of a tire left, and we get out our spare after having taken out, you know, every piece of luggage to get to the spare, and find that it's flat. So we are kind of scratching our heads. We have three little kids, and then these people, you know, who went by
a U-turn.
Yeah. On the highway and come back. Well, and what happened at that point?
Well, I'm not sure what part you're going to tell.
Well, this is your story now.
Now it's my story. Well, the only thing that I think, and they helped us change the tire.
Right. They did.
Right. Now, I don't know if this is the part you're alluding to, but the reason they stopped was because I had red hair.
Right.
And so I saved your life.
You did.
With my red hair.
You did. And you kept them entertained throughout that whole process.
The guys that were.
Yes.
That's true.
Luckily for us, you were there. It was just incredible. And you made them laugh because, you know, they couldn't believe that somebody as put together as you would have a husband as inept as me, remember?
Well, they also said they thought I was alone.
Oh, that's right.
Because you were crouched down by the tire and they didn't see you.
That's right. They would have never stopped. That's funny.
Yeah. And they were kind of scary in a They seemed slightly friendly and slightly threatening at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was...
Right.
But they helped us.
And then we continued on and got our tires.
Four new tires.
Got our four new tires. And at the next town. And I will never live down the fact that I was sharing some stories about the where we were going.
Yeah. And going to Memphis. Except that's not how you said it.
No, I quietly told everyone that we were going to Graceland. The kids think that I was, to this day, they still think I was just screaming that.
You kind of were.
Well, okay. Anyway, it's a memory.
Well, the other funny part about that, which was a kid thing, was that I remember we opened the door and the kids, you'd emptied the trunk out and I opened the sliding part of the van and we looked at them. These are three crazy kids and all of a sudden they're all reading books. White.
That's right.
And I said, you have to get out of the car. It's going up on a jack. And they're like, no, we're reading. And they were so afraid that everybody would get in trouble, so they pulled out books to read.
That's right.
So, anyway, that was just one more goofy thing.
You know, so much of this has revolved around the kids. And one of the things that I know that you've always done with them is sing. And one of the songs that you've always sung was a little nursery kind of, or nursery rhyme kind of song. Tell me about that.
Well, this was even before I took any singing lessons, but I always knew that I needed to sing to my children always. And it was one of my favorite times of the day, is to set them up on my lap and in the rocking chair and sing a couple songs and teach them the words. And and it was, you know, some of them were silly songs, but this was the last song always. And it was all through the night. And the thing that was made me feel really special was that even when they were older and worried about whatever was going on in their life, sometimes they would ask me to sing it. So I would like to sing that.
That would be great.
Okay. Sleep, my child, and peace attend thee all through the night. Guardian angels God will send thee all through the night. Soft the drowsy hours are creeping, hill and vale in slumber sleeping. I, my loving vigil keeping, all through the night.
Oh, thank you.
My pleasure.
You know, there is something that you wrote to me once that I've kept with me and has meant so, so much that I wanted to share it because to me, what you said about me was really the embodiment of how I feel about you. And I think that it's so beautiful that I couldn't even be close to recreating it in my own words. So I just wanted you to know that while you said this about me, it's truly how I feel about you. And it is, as I first wake every morning, I thank God for you. Your joy for living brings me joy. Your caring for others makes me want to be more caring. I am so grateful that we have this life to spend together, that we have each day to live together. And as I end my day cuddled next to you, I send another prayer of thanks that you are my life. I love you morning, evening, and all through the night. And that's exactly how I feel about you. My name is Manuel Andrade. I'm 58 years old. Today's date is September 11th, 2008. We're here in Springfield, Massachusetts, and I'm here with Susan, my wife.
And my name is Susan Andrade, or Andrade, and my age is 58. Today is September 11th, 2008, in Springfield, Mass., and I am here with my husband.
Okay, so we've just celebrated our 32nd wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this was a celebration of that. But I'd like to know, when did you know that I was the one for you?
Well, it was a little bit of a slow process. But I can remember the week that I was in Washington, D.C., visiting Ann and Peter and you, mm-hmm. when I just met you. That was a fun week. And then that same week, your grandfather died, and you rode with me back in the car to Massachusetts. And I remember just thinking that you are a really nice, warm person, and I really liked that about it. We talked the whole way. You didn't drive at all because you couldn't drive a standard. So I drove the whole way.
But you later taught me.
I did. And I remember when I dropped you off at the, I think it was the Providence Airport.
Yeah.
You gave me a kiss goodbye, just kind of a nice, you know, friendly. And I remember thinking, I think I want to do that again. So that was kind of the beginning of my interest. And then later that summer, when we met again for when you were studying for the bar exam, then it was like the first time I saw you, I already knew. And that was 4 or 5 months later.
Yeah.
But it was like, and that was, it just kind of took my breath away. I was not expecting that reaction that quickly, because it had nothing. We hadn't said any more. Talked for 4 months. So that was mine. When was yours?
Well, interestingly enough, I have a very similar story. I think for me, the moment was that second meeting or that follow-up meeting over the summer at Ann and Peter's. Actually, it was at Peter's house. We got together that one afternoon, and I was with Peter, and you, I think, had come with Ann or maybe by yourself, but we met in their living room, Peter's folks' living room, and you got up when I came in, because I came in later than you, and we kissed at that point. A nice casual hello kiss.
Uh-huh.
But at that point, speaking of that electric spark, that's when it happened for me. And then, you know, as you know, we didn't spend a whole lot of time not apart after that.
Yeah.
But for me, it was that exact moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so then it was after that that you actually, we went on a, quote, a date.
Right.
When we went to the movies.
Right, right. And then danced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just remember being laughing at the fact that I had a date, because it was like nobody had dates back
then. Nobody had dates, right. And I don't know, do they do that anymore?
I don't think they call anything dates.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so that led to the marriage, 32 years. So in that 32 years, any favorite stories that you have?
About us or about you?
Us, the family, whatever.
I'm going to have to think about that a minute. Do you have any?
Well, I've got a couple.
Okay.
I think one of my favorite, and it's not so much a one specific incident, but what I will always remember about us is these parties that we've ended up throwing over the years. And two in particular come to mind to me. The first was that series of parties we had in the summer with all of our friends, all of our neighbors, and then all of our kids and their neighbors.
And their friends. Yeah.
And how we would organize the entire thing with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pounds of food and, you know, all the drink. But the part that I will always remember is, you know, we always had music, and you were pretty much in charge of most of the music. But we always liked to dance in the house, and we'd clear away places to dance. But that one time when the music started and the older folks, that's us, started just, and the house had, what, 100 people in it. We just started dancing in the kitchen, uh-huh. and it took over the entire house, the upstairs, the downstairs, where everybody was, and all the younger folks who were outside barbecuing and stuff all came in and joined us yeah. in that big dance. To me, that's one of the things that I will remember about what we did in our marriage, if you will.
Yeah.
The other one was the party where you kind of organized our costume party. We did the Academy Award kind of costume party. And I think the thing that always impressed me about how you could do all of that was the fact that you planned everything so well, so that people always talked about how great a hostess you were, and then therefore how great a host I was. So so it was just great for me to kind mm-hmm. of follow in the path of the things that you did so well.
Well, you did, though. You just picked up and became the big MC. You were always the host for all the show, the game stuff, and willing to go anywhere with it,
yeah.
depending on what the question was.
Well, and it worked.
Yeah. I would agree with you on the parties. In fact, that warms me just because it was, I remember one of Emily's friends coming out and saying she'd never been in a party where the parents and the kids were all playing games together and dancing and doing all that stuff. That was cool.
Speaking of Emily, we just learned that she's getting married. And so what kind of advice do you have for her and the other kids that we have, James and Caroline, mm-hmm. in the future?
I think for each one of them, I would hope that they can know themselves well enough to be able to know what they want, express how they feel about things, be really honest with themselves and honest with the people they live with,
mm-hmm.
and share and feel safe enough, if that's the right word. I don't mean it in a danger kind of way, but emotionally safe to just live their lives as fully and as open and joyously as possible without being too worried about the concern that people might have about them. Just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's enough times that worries take over. And that's, to me, it's like you got to live it and enjoy it. And that's what I would. The other thing I would think about is with each of them and their partners is to figure out how to really communicate with each other. And I think for us, that was but it always was an ongoing process,
mm-hmm.
that we had to even learn how to argue, kind of, you know, how to explain what we meant to say and how we meant to say it and come to resolutions at the end of whatever the disagreements would be. And that's kind of the same open, emotional, vulnerable place that I think it's good. It helps you grow as a couple, not just as a person. And you?
Oh, I totally agree with that. And to me, it's, you know, the focus is always to learn how to communicate and to communicate and to communicate. because what I've discovered over the years is that maybe it's just everybody, but everybody has a different way of communicating. And some people are more comfortable being open and communicating feelings than others,
yeah.
as we've learned. And I think that it's really important that each of them find their space and figure out how to do that in a way that still maintains their integrity, but also maintains the relationship building that a marriage is all about. And it's hard. It is. I mean, we continue to figure right. out ways to do that and have to learn that, you know, after 32 years, we don't have it figured out, but it's a process to keep growing with.
And isn't that living?
Yeah.
You know, that it's still growing
yeah.
and moving.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think that the other thing, I think you may have said it, is I think it's important that they learn to cherish each other's individuality. And I think that once you can do that and celebrate the fact that not only are you a couple, but you're also independent beings, you learn more, you grow more, and I think it ends up deepening the relationship. So mm-hmm. I'd wish that for all of them as well.
That sounds good.
And speaking of growing, you know, it seems like, you know, one of the things that I'd like to ask you about, you know, that I've been so impressed with, again, it's sort of a marriage question, is, you know, you went back to school kind of in the later part of your 30s, 40s, and ended up getting a doctorate in vocal performance. Tell me about how that worked for you, why you made that decision, and what it's done for you.
Well, I think for me, not recognizing early in my life and that first of all, I knew music was important, but I didn't know how much. And I knew I liked singing, but I didn't like singing in front of people. And I didn't want to do anything. I was too shy to even take voice lessons. So when I finally got to the point of deciding I was worth the money that would cost, because I was always balancing out things out with money too, that it was worth it for me to study, and then to get such really quick, immediate feedback on how I had a lot of ability was exciting to me. But then after a while, it was like I wanted to do more. And I think it was because I finally hit kind of the right place, the right, I almost want to say well, mm-hmm. of maybe what I was supposed to be doing. If not earlier, definitely then. You know, it was like I hit it. And it was like, at that point, I couldn't stop. It was like, well, you can stop, but why would you? Because I loved every class I took. I liked being surrounded by college students. That was just a kill for me. I thought it was really fun to be with these young people. And I loved the challenge. It scared the bejesus out of me half the time. but I had, because I was older, I had a lot of confidence about, and maybe it wasn't confidence for performing, but it was kind of like, you know, I've waited this long. What the heck? Just enjoy it. Because if I stop here, it's okay. I've done what I've done, yeah. You know. And so I just kept going along. And it just was like, well, I'll try the next thing and do that a little. And always got encouragement. So when I was finally done, it was like, oh, my gosh. I really did it. I did everything I could do academically. And that was a real cool feeling for me.
Well, and for me, it was just so great to see you continue to grow, but also the example that you set for, I think, not just our family. You know, our kids were able to see that, you know, it's about finding your passion, mm-hmm. and going for it. And it doesn't matter if you don't have it at 12 or 22 or 32, but as long as you're living and breathing, when you find your passion, you should continue to go for it. And they've talked about that since.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that is something that's a terrific lesson that I think you've helped impart to them. And I don't even know if you've fully embraced that yet, but I digress, because there's another story I want to talk. I want to throw out to you. And I don't know that I've ever told you this either, but you know, when you went through all of this, the process, you had to do all these recitals. And I think that the moment that I realized how great you were was your very first recital. When you walked on stage, and first of all, it was this big room, you know, lots of people, all your friends, and we had the entire neighborhood, and, you know, it was just, there must have been, what, 200 people there.
And all my college friends.
And all your college friends.
Yes.
And you walked out, and there was this spotlight on you, and you had this beautiful dress. And first of all, before you even started, there was this audible gasp amongst the people about, wow, who is this person? And then you started singing, and it was like people were just taken to another plane almost, you know? Everybody just sort of sat back in awe that not only is this friend, mother, acquaintance, colleague this talented, but she's sharing this with everybody. It was a magical, absolutely magical night. And at that point in time, it was sort of like, oh my God, you cannot stop this. I feel like I was encouraging along the way, but once I saw that part of you, that talent demonstrated in front of everybody, it was like, wow, you got to keep going. You just have to. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I mentioned, in the course of this discussion already, our kids, and obviously, you know, they mean a lot to both of us. I would like to get your feelings in terms of maybe a little bit of how you felt when they were first born.
Oh, gosh. I think with Emily, I was just overwhelmed.
Yeah.
In a first child, what do you do? Look at this beautiful baby. The responsibility of it all and the joy of it all, the wonder, all of that. And she was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Although she was jaundiced. We thought she was kind of Asian looking. Later we learned the poor child had to suffer with our early incompetence.
Well, that wasn't us. That was, you know.
She got over it.
Right.
And I think with James, I remember being worried, excited that we had a son. I thought, oh my God, how, I don't know, what do you do with boys? You know, that's how I felt. And yet I was just thrilled. And I couldn't wait to help him become actually the wonderful man that he is now. I just wanted to see that process. And it was fascinating to see how completely different the personalities of James and Emily were. Just, and I hesitate to say it's boy and girl, male, female, but there were definitely things that were very much male, mm-hmm. and her and Emily is female, that was, I refused to see as a possibility, even through my teaching years when I was in early education, because I just thought that can't be, you know. But when James would chew a piece of toast into the shape of a gun, when we didn't allow guns in our house, I thought, there's something to this.
Yeah.
And he'd be shooting people with his toast, you know?
Right.
It's like, what?
And you were so, so cognizant of not forcing stereotypes that you wouldn't have dolls and things, but Emily finally needed...
Well, I had dolls, but not Barbies.
Okay, excuse me, yes. Oh, is there any other kind? No, I'm just kidding. Right, but then remember what her favorite color was in that whole period?
It was pink, everything. From socks to underwear to bows in her hair.
So this, like, this child that you're trying to make this...
become a earth goddess child is not happening at all.
That's great.
And then with Caroline, of course, she was, as the third, it was just a whole different... You're much more comfortable with the whole rearing process, and it was just wonderful just to have her.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like just I focused on her rather than the first child, the boy.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I will never forget a night when I think I was probably nursing, and just she was resting on my shoulder, and I just remember hearing the puff of her breath on my neck. I could feel it and hear it, and it was the quietest, sweetest sound. And I, at the time, I thought, I never want to forget that. Mm-hmm. That was just, and, you know, they've all been, I think as for us as parents, I'm kind of going away, but we've talked about this a little bit. Our goal was to be sure that they each felt strong in their own way, whatever
right.
it was.
Right.
And that they could be whoever they were.
Yep.
And they didn't need to be first child, second child, third child, although that kind of does fall into place sometimes, but that they could be sure of themselves as the person they are, and that you want. And I feel like they've started going that way. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very different, all of them.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing.
Well, and you know, my mantra has always been, you are very special and very important, because there's nobody in the world just like you. And when times are tough, when things happen that, you know, you just don't have control over, I always come back to that very simple kind of philosophy, if you will. I think that's something that you've done just by kind of the way you are. You know, I sometimes have to put it in, you know, a little more clobber over the head kind of strategy, but here it is.
But you know, saying it's important.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Letting them know those words.
So what kind of dreams do you have for them?
Oh, geez. I guess you could just be kind of, it sounds trite.
Mm-hmm.
I just want them to be happy. I really do. I just want them to find their own happiness.
Sometimes, you know, cliches are there for a reason, you know. They're kind of universal truths.
Right. I mean, I hope they can live well. And I don't mean that by monetarily. I mean in their sense of who they are and how they look at the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's 'cause I think you can. And maybe I've come to this a little later than when I was helping them grow up, but you can choose to look at things from a positive or negative point of view, and it is the choice you make that makes it be what it is. If it's, you know, if things aren't going well, they can be options for opportunity and growth and all that stuff, which I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to decide that you want to make it that way, and I hope they can. Rather than get down on it all and then just enjoy life. How about you?
Well, I hope that they become the kind of people that impact people positively, and so that the world becomes a better place because they were in it. I don't mean they have to, you know, win a Nobel Prize or, you know, do something so extraordinary that it's obvious that the world is a better place. But, you know, if they live lives that are filled with grace, filled with contribution to them, to the community, that are filled with their ability to grow and learn, and hopefully be happy doing that, then I think that they will be successful and people that I know that I would be proud knowing. And I think that's my dream for them, each of them, to, you know, individually.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of philosophy, you know, life philosophy, is important to you in terms of how you feel like you would like to be remembered?
Well, I'd like to be remembered on stage.
Hmm?
No, not really. Although, you know, if I'd started earlier, I might have been remembered on stage.
Exactly.
I don't know. You know, just don't know.
Right.
So how I'd like to be remembered. I think as somebody who lived with joy. You know, this summer when we were at the Cape and had played all those games. And I remember being so overflowingly happy and having a blast playing the games. And I don't remember if it was James or Caroline or somebody just said, geez, I just don't think I've ever seen you this way before. You know, and it was just, I'd like that to be one of the memories that people would have. The other thing that I know I do now is I think I have a pretty good sense of humor, and in my one way I bring it out is in very bleak moments I find really ironic or, you know, worst case scenarios that make it funny, and and I think that's a good balance to the craziness that either I live in or I create myself, because I do a lot of that.
Yeah, and laughing a lot is important.
Yeah. You've got to. And then I think I hopefully seem like someone with convictions that I'm, you know, I'm a good person. I hope that's how I'm viewed, not just a sarcastic person, you know, but good, with a good soul.
That's great. Well, your sense of humor has always been one of the things that I've, you know, been attracted to forever. Can you think of any stories that required that sense of humor?
Oh, I've gotten into so many jams. Are you thinking of one?
Not in, well, this one is really more a reflection on me, but it's because you guys made...
Oh, is this your closet story?
No, no, God, no. Although, I could tell
that
one.
That's a pretty funny story. That's you, though.
No, that's...
I like that one.
No, no, that we're reversing the role here. I'll come... If we have time, I can come back.
I think that's a good one to tell. Mm.
I was actually thinking more about... the time we took a family vacation, a driving vacation, and we were going to go to, actually we were going to go to Disneyland or Disney World,
yeah,
and by way of Memphis.
Yeah.
And this was during Emily's early phase where she was, you know, I don't know, how old was she, 11?
12, 13.
Okay.
She was in love with Elvis for quite a while.
All right, so that was her Elvis phase.
Yeah.
And so we're driving along from... This is when we lived in Kansas City, and we're driving along the kind of, not the major highways of Missouri, but, you know, a two-lane highway, and car is jam-packed as always. The van was jam-packed, and, you know, you're the one who knows how to pack. You had it all hermetically sealed.
Yep.
And, of course, we're driving along and hear this big boom. And what happens? We have a flat tire. Now, I'm not going to say that this is the kind of thing that you looked at before we left and said, should we look at getting some new tires before we go? Because, you know.
Because I knew that we should, but I thought I couldn't say that. I wasn't being honest.
I think I was in that phase of why do today what you can put off until tomorrow.
Well, I was just following suit. I didn't even bring it up.
Okay, great. Anyway, so we get this, we get this flat. We come, you know, actually a blowout, so there's not much of a tire left, and we get out our spare after having taken out, you know, every piece of luggage to get to the spare, and find that it's flat. So we are kind of scratching our heads. We have three little kids, and then these people, you know, who went by
do a U-turn,
yeah. On the highway and come back. Well, and what happened at that point?
Well, I'm not sure what part you're going to tell.
Well, this is your story now.
Now it's my story. Well, the only thing that I think, and they helped us change the tire.
Right. They did.
Right. Now, I don't know if this is the part you're alluding to, but the reason they stopped was because I had red hair.
Right.
And so I saved your life.
You did.
With my red hair.
You did. And you kept them entertained throughout that whole process.
The guys that were, yeah.
Yes, yes.
That's true.
Luckily for us, you were there. It was just incredible. And you made them laugh because, you know, they couldn't believe that somebody as put together as you would have a husband as inept as me, remember?
Well, they also said they thought I was alone.
Oh, that's right.
Because you were crouched down by the tire and they didn't see you.
That's right. And they would have never stopped. That's funny.
Yeah. And they were kind of scary in a They seemed slightly friendly and slightly threatening at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was...
Right.
But they helped us. That
and then we continued on and got our tires.
Four new tires.
Got our four new tires and at the next town. And I will never live down the fact that I was sharing some stories about the where we were going.
Yeah. And going to Memphis. Except that's not how you said it.
No, I quietly told everyone that we were going to Graceland. Yeah. The kids think that I was, to this day, they still think I was just screaming that.
You kind of were.
Well, okay. Anyway, it's a memory.
Well, the other funny part about that, which was a kid thing, was that I remember we opened the door and the kids, you'd emptied the trunk out and I opened the sliding part of the van. And we looked at them. These are three crazy kids. And all of a sudden, they're all reading books. White.
That's right.
And I said, you have to get out of the car. It's going up on a jack. And they're like, no, we're reading. And they were so afraid that everybody would get in trouble. So they pulled out books to read.
That's right.
Anyway, that was just one more goofy thing.
You know, so much of this has revolved around the kids, and one of the things that I know that you've always done with them is sing. One of the songs that you've always sung was a little nursery kind of, or nursery rhyme kind of song. Tell me about that.
Well, this was even before I took any singing lessons, but I always knew that I needed to sing to my children always. And it was one of my favorite times of the day, is to set them up on my lap and in the rocking chair and sing a couple songs and teach them the words. And and it was, you know, some of them were silly songs, but this was the last song always. And it was all through the night. And the thing that was made me feel really special was that even when they were older and worried about whatever was going on in their life, sometimes they would ask me to sing it. So I would like to sing that.
That would be great.
Okay. Sleep, my child, and peace attend thee all through the night. Guardian angels God will send thee all through the night. Soft the drowsy hours are creeping, hill and vale in slumber sleeping. I, my loving vigil keeping all through the night.
Oh, thank you.
My pleasure.
You know, there is something that you wrote to me once that I've kept with me and has meant so much that I wanted to share it because to me what you said about me was really the embodiment of how I feel about you, and I think that it's so beautiful that I couldn't even be close to recreating it in my own words. So I just wanted you to know that while you said this about me, it's truly how I feel about you. And it is, as I first wake every morning, I thank God for you. Your joy for living brings me joy. Your caring for others makes me want to be more caring. I am so grateful that we have this life to spend together, that we have each day to live together. And as I end my day cuddled next to you, I send another prayer of thanks that you are my life. I love you morning, evening, and all through the night. And that's exactly how I feel about you.